whoever you are, wherever you are, and whenever it is, you are catching some brainwaves coming to you from the banks of the melting and deliquescent St. Vrain River in almost always sunny Longmont, Colorado. I'm Becky Peters, and across the table is the only co-host who prefaces his best points by saying, Scout's honor, he's Ben Kalb. Ben, what's good?
It is all good, Becky. I feel crazy lucky to be bringing giants in education to the earbuds of busy teachers so we can all stand on their shoulders and be more informed, inspired, and connected educators. And Scout's honor, there it is. You are in for a treat with this episode. We're deviating a little bit from our normal K-12 space and looking at a giant nonetheless, a colossal CEO of one of the most famous long-running education organizations in the world, the Girl Scouts of America. Today on the episode, we have the great privilege of speaking with Sylvia Acevedo.
Yeah, and we've been sitting on this interview for a little while, just waiting for that perfect time when we all need a little bit of inspiration. And seriously, Sylvia's story and the way she talks about it will make you feel like you want to run through walls. And make sure you stay tuned after the episode because we will give some out of our heads and into the classroom tips about some of the things that we talk about. But in this episode, we will speak to Sylvia about some lessons teachers can learn from her story. We discuss if boys and girls learn differently, and we discuss lessons that schools and teachers can learn from the Girl Scouts organization. So without further ado, here she is.
You are an author, an entrepreneur, an engineer, and a rocket scientist. Those are the amazing descriptors on your website. Did you always know that you would someday embody those roles, or how did your sense of self, your sense of identity change over time?
So absolutely not. I never thought of all those things when I was growing up. I had no idea that many of those roles even existed. So I'm very grateful that that's where my journey has gone. You know, I was very fortunate that there were several key influences in my life. Head Start, you know, obviously the Girl Scouts, also the public library. You know, when I grew up, we didn't have Google. Going to the library was really what showed you kind of the world of opportunities, and having that lifelong interest in learning, having great teachers, all those things gave me that skill set and that foundation of curiosity, of being able to read well, and also, you know, enjoying math and having hands-on experience at Girl Scouts. You know, that hands-on experience at Girl Scouts, earning my badge, really taught me that I could do science at a young age and that I had the aptitude for it. So then I began doing it. And the more you do something, the better you are at it. And that's what happened to me with math. You know, I learned I could do it and I could do it well. And I challenged myself and I did even more. And the more you do something, the better you get at it. And it becomes this self-reinforcing cycle. And I got so good at math, I became a rocket scientist good at math.
That's amazing. The pictures of you that you put of yourself in the book when you were like in third grade and second grade, they're the cutest things I've ever seen in my life. I would highly recommend any listeners to pick up that book. It's called A Path to the Stars. And in it, Sylvia really outlines her life and how all of those programs had an effect on her. And I'm curious to you, Sylvia, what did it mean to you to publish a book about your life? Why was it important to you to tell this story to a broad audience?
So there's a couple of things that happened at the same time. I was talking to kids I'd been interested in education after I had a great technology career and had a successful exit as an entrepreneur. I started giving back and working in the community, and I would go and talk at schools. And I was talking in one school in particular, a very large school. And after my talk, I went outside in the courtyard and there was a huge line, and I thought it was for lunch. And I said, oh, I guess that's the line for lunch. And they said, no, that's the line of kids that want to talk to you.
Oh,
and I remember thinking, you know, they all wanted to ask me questions. I, you know, was somebody that looked like them. I even remember some of the kids would ask me what brand of clothing I wore, all these kinds of things. And I realized that there was a hunger for somebody who looked like me that reflected them, or that reflected their, as a girl, their ambitiousness, or even as a boy, their ambitiousness, their interest in space. And there aren't as many stories like that. And I remember thinking, as an engineer, I'm always thinking, how do you scale, right? And so how do I scale? And I thought, well, I've got to write a book. And so at that moment, I decided to write a book. And I approached it as an engineer and not as a writer. And I think this is kind of funny because I put together a PowerPoint presentation that had the growth of kids, the need for STEM, the importance of a mentor, or, you know, if you can see it, you can be it. And then I outlined what the chapters might be. And I put this proposal together. And then I went to an event in New York. I flew myself there where there were going to be a lot of publishing agents. I paid my admissions, went there, And I showed him the PowerPoint presentation with, there were a couple of videos, but also the pictures. And they said, okay, this is compelling. What have you written? And I said, well, here's the chapter outlines. And they go, okay, you know, book writer, you know, have you written yet? I said, oh, no, I'll get there. Totally. I'm like, okay, yeah, I can do that. So they're like, okay, we're interested, but you got to give us something to read. So I wrote a first few chapters. I decided to do middle school. And the reason I chose middle school was that's the last age. I feel like, you know, that proverbial elevator, you put your hand in your elevator to get the doors to stop and like, wait, I feel like my book is the proverbial hand in the elevator, trying to get that elevator door to stay open so you can go in. Because in middle school, if you take some math, science, and a little bit of programming, you still have a chance in this digital age. Everything is going to be redesigned around technology. I was just at the Fashion Institute of Technology in New York, $3 trillion industry being redone from supply chain to design, etc., around technology. So there's still going to be important needs for people and the way we communicate, but so many of our tools are going to have that digital interface. I don't want all these kids to not be part of that or be left out because they don't have a little bit of math or a little bit of programming. And so I wanted to inspire them. And so my book is that proverbial, you know, hand in the elevator. Wait, kids in middle school, you can still do it. You can still pursue your heart's dream. So that's kind of why I chose that. And then I hired somebody to help me write it more in a middle school voice. You know, I hadn't known how to write. I could tell my story, but I didn't know how to do it in a way that was more effective for middle school. And I can tell you short, every one of her comments in my would be more emotion, more angst.
Yeah. middle school. More shirtless vampires? Is that a thing?
No vampires.
Okay.
But angst.
Nice. Well,
that. And so that's why I decided on, you know, why the book and why middle school.
Well, that's great. And I thought some of your stories in there are just can give you some chills and goosebumps thinking about. Can you talk about some of your early Girl Scout experiences and how really those are what helped you or launched you on the path to becoming a rocket scientist?
Absolutely. It's interesting because I didn't realize that until somebody who was doing an archives project at Stanford University called me and said they wanted to interview me because I was one of the first Hispanic male or female to have ever gotten a graduate engineering degree from Stanford, and still is the case. And you've got to rethink, you know, Stanford University, one of the best universities in the world, and really they're at Silicon Valley. So getting a master's degree in engineering from Stanford is really kind of a gateway into Silicon Valley. And so it's very, not only prestigious, it's also very hard. And the best and the brightest from the entire world want to go there. So they were saying, so how is it that you were one of the first and still, unfortunately, one of the few? And at the time you were applying, Stanford really wasn't recruiting where you lived, like in southern New Mexico. So how did, A, you know about Stanford, and B, you not only were interested, but you were prepared, and C, you did really well. And I had really never thought about that. And so they kept interviewing me, and they kept saying, but why? Why was it that you're interested in science? Why was it that you're interested in math? Why did you choose those electives? And I realized it all went back to when I was in Girl Scouts. We were out at my first taste of s'mores cookies around an open fire. It was fantastic. And then I was looking up at the stars, and my troop leader sat next to me and showed me constellations. Now, I had looked at the stars a lot, but I kind of thought they were just twinkly lights, right? Mm-hmm. And so she taught me there was a pattern, there was a Big Dipper, the Little Dipper. And I was like, wow, there's like a whole system out there. They're just not twinkly lights. And she remembered that. So that later on, we were earning our badges. And a lot of girls, including me, wanted to earn a cooking badge like my friends. But she suggested and recommended that I earn my science badge. And at first I said no, but then she kind of kept pushing it. So I said, okay, I'll do both. And I'm so grateful that that happened, because when cooking, I failed my first few attempts. And so you learn, you have to read the directions carefully. You've got to get the sequence right, and you've got to get the heat right, you know, to even successfully make something edible. But also when I decided to, as part of my science badge, was to make an Estes rocket from a kit. And again, you had to read the directions carefully. You had to get the sequence right. And you also had to get the heat right. And I realized that science was just like cooking. And, you know, girls were expected to cook, but, you know, not expected to do science. And I thought I could do both. And at that point, at that young age in elementary school, I got that confidence and said I could do that. And so that's why I began taking all the science and math electives, even though at that time, that really wasn't something that was very common. And not only did I take them, I liked it. And I was that kid who, when the teacher assigned, you know, all the odd problems or all the even, I did them all, right? I was that kid. And so I got really good at it. And so, you know, I became an engineer. And when my guidance counselor told me I couldn't do it, I remember thinking, you know, cooking is just like science. I can do that. So that's where I got that love. But the other very important part was the resilience and the determination and even thinking that I could do that. You mentioned cookies earlier, and I got to tell you, I'm thanking the Girl Scout cookie program because I thought I was going to have to quit Girl Scouts because my family, we lived in near poverty, paycheck to paycheck, and sometimes ran out of money between the paychecks. I thought, you know what, we're going to do a lot of fun things in Girl Scouts and my family can't afford it. And at that point, I stayed after and I talked to the troop leader and I said, you know, my family can't afford it. And she said, don't worry, Sylvia, we're going to sell Girl Scout cookies. I was like, huh? But what she taught me is we're going to create opportunity. What is your goal? What is it that you want to do? And then you set sub goals and put your path, you chart your path to your goal. Now that sounds simple, but I got to tell you, if you're raised in near poverty, there is no one around you that knows how to create opportunity because if they did, you wouldn't be in near poverty. And so that idea that you could create your future, you could define what your future and you could create that path and then create those sub goals to get it, that really changed everything for me. Suddenly, I realized my dreams could come true. I could set them as goals and then set the path. But then I would tell you the other thing she taught me and our troop that this lesson has stayed to this day is never walk away from a sale until you've heard no three times. And that I have used repeatedly in my career. And as a young girl, you first sell to your family, people at church, but then I was still shy of making my goal. So I had to talk to that neighbor who I'd only seen her go in and out of her car, but never talked to her. And I went to ask her if she would buy Girl Scout cookies, and she said no. And I remember standing there looking at her with a thought bubble over my head. Troop leader Mrs. Provine said, I can't walk away from a sale until I've heard no three times. And the woman looked at me like, I said no. So I looked around her and I said, is there anybody else at your house that would want to buy Girl Scout cookies? And she said, no, again. And again, I just stood there and she looked at me like, no, again. And then I said, would there be anybody's day you would make if you bought Girl Scout cookies? And she bought a box. Wow. Now that taught me so much. That taught me persistence, resilience, right? How do you get to the yes? And I'll tell you, my career has been a lot about that, about being persistent, about being resilient. How do you get to the yes? So I'm so grateful I had that Girl Scout experience because it really gave me those kinds of tools to be successful. But to be honest, it's not just me. Half of all female elected officials in America were Girl Scouts. This last class that was elected to the House of Representatives, like 60% of them are Girl Scouts. And almost every female astronaut was a Girl Scout. So it wasn't just me. It's that Girl Scouting experience that, you know, helps you be persistent, resilient, courageous, brave to be able to make your goals.
Yeah, there are just so many lessons in every single one of your stories. And they really, I feel like I could run through a wall just hearing your stories because they're so inspiring. Girl Scouts are pretty known for their badges and the patches. And I found it really interesting that you have a CEO patch and there's a couple cool symbols on there. Could you tell us what the symbols are on your CEO patch and what lessons or stories they relate back to?
I'm grateful that you asked that. Yeah, the only way you get that is by meeting me. And with my patch, I equate it to like a video game with three layers. The first one is there's a planet on my patch and it is one of the missions that I worked on, which is Voyager 2. It did a flyby of this planet. So when you see my patch, I ask girls, what planet is it? It's Jupiter. And you know that because of the big red dot. So girls who don't know that, I get to help teach them that, you know, when you look at a planet, you see a big red dot, that's the red storm. And I worked on the Voyager 2. And I analyzed a lot of data coming back of that flyby of the moons Io and Europa. So, you know, that's that symbol. And there's stars and the stars represent my troop leaders and my mom. Now, the second element of my patch is what I call a word problem. You know, a lot of people in math go, oh, don't like word problems. But it is, every atom has a nucleus. And what is my nucleus? And when you look at my patch, there is the symbol of the atom. And there is somebody, something in the middle, the nucleus. And that is the Girl Scout trefoil. So Girl Scouts is my nucleus. So you have to learn a lot from that. You have to know what the symbol of an atom is. You learn nucleus. And in that nucleus is a rocket ship, which is kind of harbinger back to my how I earned my science badge, making a rocket, an Estes rocket. And that rocket on my badge says CEO. And if you go to my LinkedIn profile, there's a video about this. And then last but not least are my three favorite math symbols. And I do have favorite math symbols. So first is sigma, which, you know, looks like an E or a backwards three. And that's the Greek symbol. And it means summation, to add. And when I discovered how to create opportunity and how could I track my progress to that opportunity, it was by adding my cookie sales, adding my cookie revenue. So I loved to add. So summation. The next one is pi. And that's because when I was earning a crafts badge, I was making something. It was actually a gym bag with round ends, and there wasn't a pattern. And my mother said, how do you know how much material and how are you going to measure it, especially with a round ends? And I said, oh, don't worry, Mom. I measured the circumference. It's 2 pi r. And she's like, I'm so glad you like math, Miha, because she had no idea what I was talking about. And then the final was an infinity. My final symbol was infinity. And it's like, you know, Girl Scouts gave me infinite potential. So it's a fun patch. And I have both stickers and patches for when people want it. And it's kind of fun. You know, it's a very unique business card.
I'm very proud to own one of those. And I love it. I show it to my daughter all the time. And I really am so excited about getting her into Girl Scouts when it's time. But just to kind of illustrate again for our listeners, some of the barriers that you had coming up against this, not to belabor the points, but just so that people have kind of a broader understanding of your past and how that contributed to who you are today. You did mention that your guidance counselor said that you couldn't be an engineer. And I remember reading in your book about, you know, one of the, I think it was a dean at the New Mexico State University that said, but you're a girl, are you sure you want to be an engineer? And then they didn't even believe that you'd filled out the application. How do you get past that over and over and over? And how can we instill that kind of persistence in the students that we teach?
Yeah, that persistence and that resilience. You know, I think that, you know, not taking no for an answer three times really matters. Figuring out what is the issue. So, you know, in my book, I tell that story of how I play drums and I was the first chair. A first chair normally got to choose their marching band instrument. Our band had just purchased timbales that were pretty heavy back in the day. And I said I wanted to play the timbales, and my band director said no. And I kept going, why no? Why no? And you can't just say, because it's a girl, why? And he said, they're too heavy. I don't think you can carry them. You know, you're going to be in parades. You're going to be walking miles with them. And I thought, okay, now that's what I have to solve for. I have to solve for that. And in the book, I write about what I did to work out and get ready. And I did. And I was able to carry the instruments. But, you know, later on in my careers, you know, when I wanted to do global leadership and I was bilingual, bicultural, and I was told I couldn't go, I couldn't travel overseas, you know, people wouldn't respect me, whatever, or it was unsafe. You know, on my own, I paid for my ticket, traveled to those countries, came back with proof that I was there, or I met with customers and everything went well. And so it's like, what is the real challenge? What is the real thing that you have to overcome? And once you understand that, then you can solve for that and not just let somebody just put you off by saying no, but what is the reason behind that no? And once you do that, then you can solve that. You know, the other issue that you brought up is when I had applied, and again, going back in my time, they didn't even think girls were going to go after engineering scholarships. So when you filled out this form, they didn't even know my gender. And when it turns out I won it, they wanted to personally interview me because they just didn't think I had answered the questions. So they made me answer a lot of questions. But, you know, I just took that as, this is what I need to do to get this. And I knew it because I had answered the questions. I claimed I knew how to change the oil. And so they asked me to step through it. And when I stepped through every step of changing the oil in the car, they said, well, you've just watched your dad. And it made me laugh because I'm like, my dad has never changed the oil in the car. You just have to be, you know, that persistence and that resilience that I learned, you know, it really does pay off.
I think that those are stories are so amazing. And like I said, I plan on reading your story to my son, who's 5, my daughter, who's 3, just over and over, because I think those lessons that you don't take other people's assumptions as ceilings on your life are just, like Ben said, I could run through a wall. They're so inspiring. I'm curious, you mentioned bilingualism, and I'm curious for you, what has it meant in your life for you to be bilingual? I think it must be such an asset. Like, I've always wanted to know another language, not enough to take classes and actually follow up on it, but it's probably not always been sunshine and roses either.
Well, you know, what's fantastic now that I know a little bit more about brain science is that, you know, if you're bilingual, it develops your brain in a way that you can create a lot of synapses and linkages. And I think that's probably one of the reasons I've been able to come up with innovative ideas and connect the dots. Because, you know, when you're young and you're having to realize, no, that's in English and that's in Spanish, and you just know that, you're able to make those switches, and then you're able to say, oh, I need to connect this, you know, in this language, or make that connection in that language. So I think it really developed my brain in a lot of ways. And I think that was really great. And then I used that as an opportunity when I was working in technology and moved over to working global, and to say, look, you know, I'm bilingual, I'm bicultural, this is an opportunity. But, you know, I also do bring up in the book, when I was enrolled in Head Start, you know, growing up, my name was Silvia Elia Acevedo Monge, all 4 names. And because that is in our culture, that's how your name, you include your mother's surname as well. But when I got to school, the form only had 2 names. And they told me, when I said, what's your name? I said, Silvia Elia Acevedo Monge. And she said, choose 2. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's it. So my mom said, say Silvia Acevedo. And I went home and I asked my dad, and he said, that's just how things are. So, you know, I felt kind of bad leaving my mom out. But you realize that's a little different. But I'm glad I put those sections in the book, because I was in St. Louis and a librarian said she was reading the book to her class. And there was a boy she had never reached at all in her class, and he always seemed checked out. And when she was reading the part about how I translated for my family and others, and he suddenly came to life and he goes, oh, that's what I have to do. It's so exhausting. She said, he speaks. That boy speaks, you know, like, oh my God, he's alive. He cares. And she said, I just never thought about it. And now she had a connection with him. And she thanked me for having that in the book, because they were able to use the book in a way to connect with him that she had never been able to bridge that gap before.
That's amazing. Think about the importance of people's names and people's culture like that, and how that brings an asset to what they're doing in the classroom. So it's really, I think it's great that you share that story and that it's, you know, reaching so many people.
And it's so important, because if you think about today with global technology, English has become a standard language. English used to be an elite language. Being an American, you spoke the most elite language in the world. But now English is the de facto language of business. So you have 100 million people in China speaking very fluent English. You have almost 1 billion people in India speaking fluent English, right? So suddenly the world is a lot flatter. And so you used to be able to be competitive because you had geographic proximity here in the US, and you also spoke the elite language. Well, it's no longer elite. And now, you know, geographic proximity, depending on your job, may not be a big issue. You could do it, you know, at a distance. So, but service and sales is always done in the local language. And so if we Americans only speak English, when we try to sell overseas, we're going to miss service and sales opportunities because we don't speak the local language. But yet everyone in the world is learning English so they can take away our jobs in service and sales. So it also becomes a competitive opportunity for careers to know another language for Americans.
So we covered, and kind of as Becky and I were brainstorming this episode, we loved all your stories, but then we loved all the lessons we think we can learn as a public education institution from Girl Scouts and how they've modernized. And so can you talk to us a little bit about what you think public ed can learn from Girl Scouts, an institution that's well over 100 years old? And how is Girl Scouts no longer your mother's or grandmother's Girl Scouts?
Well, that's a great question. And there are some things that are still the same, and then there's some things that are different. The things that are still the same is we've been a learning organization from the very beginning. Our founder, over 100 years ago, we were founded when we were moving from the agrarian age to the industrial age. And one of the reasons she really wanted to do badges in the way that she did it was a lot of girls did not have the ability to show their certification that they knew something. Because in that day, there weren't as many opportunities for girls. So how do you show girls that you know, how do you show others that you know about electricians, a pilot's badge, construction, a carpentry badge, an outdoor badge, all of those things? Those were some of our first badges, which were very science, technology, engineering, math. But those badges showed others, I know how to do this. So we were a learning organization from the very beginning. That was really important. So now, 100 years later, we're still a learning organization, but now we're moving from the industrial age to the digital age. So our badges are reflective of the type of things that are important to know now. So obviously, a lot still with the great outdoors. And I like to tell people the first S in STEM is science, and science is the great outdoors. And we make sure that a vast majority of our badges and journey work are unplugged. So that's really important because, yes, you need to know about digital, but you also need to be able to think and wonder with the whole world, not being limited by a screen. So, science, learning life skills, that tenacity, that persistence, resilience, that's very entrepreneurial. So our cookie program, but also what we're doing with STEM. When you look at what's happening in education, our educational model has stayed the same. We look at girl potential, and then we say, how can we teach that girl a skill? Those badges we're talking about. But then what makes Girl Scouts different than almost every other youth serving nonprofit is that we ask her to take action. She has to do something, and we ask her to take community service along. If you're going to take action on something, do it to help others. And then the fourth element of our model is that caring adult, that mentor, that troop leader who looks to develop that child's potential. So when you're thinking about education, now when you can kind of invert the classroom and have kids, learn the material, but then come and discuss it in the classroom, that teacher becomes more that mentor of developing their potential. But I think the other thing that Girl Scouts has been really successful in, when you're asking somebody to do something, to make an impact, that also kind of grounds in all sorts of the experiential learning. And we make a big deal of how do we include all the five senses in our work. I'm really excited about, we have different service learning awards, which are our bronze and silver, and we ask girls to go and take action in their community to make it a better place. So, it could be, a park bench, or it could be working or doing something for the homeless, etc. But we also have a premier award, and there's a lot of organizations that have great service, community service leadership award, and that's fantastic. But at Girl Scouts, we also have our gold award, which is a sustainable solution for a societal grand challenge. And I have to say, I'm so impressed with some of the girls that do this project. Every year, about at least three girls that are still in high school change state laws. I mean, it's amazing. Because, change child marriage in New Hampshire, stop secondhand smoke in two states, increase...
Get rid of the straw in Starbucks?
Yes. That was a Girl Scout Gold Award project. Absolutely. And she's still in high school. And, colleges today, when back to education, colleges today are looking, and employers are looking for those people who can take on grand challenges and make a difference. So I had a college admissions officer who I can't name what university, but it's a top university. And he said, when we see a gold award, on a girl's resume, we automatically put it in the final package because we know she's taken on a societal grand challenge. Like you said, like, come on, there's a girl in high school who got Alaska Airlines, Starbucks, California to do No Straw November. And she's still in high school. I mean, it's like pretty amazing.
The one, when I got to meet you, you brought that eco glue. Can you tell us about that too?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, that was a middle school girl.
What?
So I know. So we have a big thing about, you know, what our mission is to create girls of courage, confidence, and character who make the world a better place. So, you know, that's what we teach from when they're a daisy on up. So these girls are in middle school and they're on a robotics team. And side note, almost every all girl winning robotics team has been a Girl Scout team troop. And we get robotics badges now from age five on up. But they're visiting, this girl is visiting her grandmother in a nursing home, and she sees all these styrofoam cups. And she said, this is bad for the environment. Being a good Girl Scout, she goes and talks to the manager and says, you know, you shouldn't have these styrofoam cups. They're bad. And he looks at her and he goes, they're cheap, you know, so like, get over it. So, you know, I think part of the story is she was in St. Louis, but she got a robotics team together and they began figuring out, what can you do with styrofoam? What can you do with used styrofoam? And they created a solvent, which I think is a very industrial application. And they were in St. Louis. I think they were, if they were in Los Angeles, they would have created a, I don't know, a surfer board or something, surfboard. But, you know, in St. Louis, you create a solvent. And they created glue that you can use for paper out of the styrofoam. And they even have a patent pending on it.
Whoa.
And I love that, you know, because they knew I have the skills. Now, what can I do to make the world a better place? And I love those kinds of examples. And the great thing about my job is, yeah, I could probably regale you with that for hours, with all the great things that girls do, because they've got that courage, the confidence, the skill sets. And also because we focus on civics a lot, I think that's one of the reasons why we are 8% of the population, but more than half of all female elected officials in America were Girl Scouts, is because when you're young and you realize I can make a difference in civics, people pay attention. So I just recently, a brownie saw that her park was really, you know, not kept up. And she wrote a letter to their mayor saying, my troop wants to be part of the solution. Let's fix this park. So what mayor is going to say, sorry, I'm not going to take you up on it. And so they fixed the park. So this 7-year-old girl realizes I'm doing something that helps my community, and the mayor's paying attention, and I meet the mayor, and you know what? I could be him someday. So I think that, you know, that's why we over-index so much in women leaders and in women, you know, civic leaders as well.
So I want to ask a follow-up about that. I think when you speak about it, and when I've had other conversations with people about how to engage girls in STEM fields and things like this, I think the coupling of STEM and civics is a really powerful strategy and one that Girl Scouts has done really well. Do you think that that's a way to get more underrepresented participants in more involved in STEM fields? And then also, as kind of a corollary to that, I'm curious about what STEM means to you. You know, everybody's got kind of a different definition, even though it's four letters and everybody knows what those letters stand for. But what does STEM mean and what does it look like?
So, you know, so the first one in terms of getting girls interested, especially girls underrepresented. So I'll give you an example. We're working with one partner and their mission in life, their reason is they provide solutions to keep America safe from those who would do us harm in the air, the land, and the sea. They notice there's this huge workforce gap, especially or acutely in maritime solutions. There's just not a lot of girls that are really looking at fields that are in that category. And they said, you know, one of the ways you get girls or anyone interested is understanding buoyancy and understanding center of gravity. So if you get those, that's the way to start. And they said, here's how you do it. You teach, you get girls to build a boat, and then you get girls to race the boat. And that's how they'll learn. And we said, you know, at Girl Scouts, we're experts in how girls learn and lead. And so we get that you're trying to teach buoyancy and center of gravity. So we'll get girls to do that, but we're going to do it in a way that's of interest to girls. So our middle school journey is girls build a model of a corgi dog. And a corgi dog is like the queen's dog, short legs, low center of gravity. You create that model dog and it has to float upright. Okay, so immediately, and you have to name it. And so that middle school girl, they create this dog and she has to float upright. Because if it doesn't float outright, it drowns. And then it has very short legs and it's not really known as a strong swimmer. So you have to create a flotation device. So I will tell you, a lot of girls in middle school are not interested in building a boat and racing a boat. But I will tell you, girls are very interested in making sure their corgi does not drown. you know, the corgi that they've named. And so they learn those concepts, but in a way that is relevant to them. And I'm really excited that we are doing a lot around STEM, but looking at it from the lens of how do you make the world a better place? We know that girls, ranking is not as important as linking. You know, that community, the friendships, the friendship network, the friendship circle, that really matters to girls and how they learn. And we really build our solutions so that that's how they learn. Now, I'll give you another quick one, which is how do you teach networking? And, you know, a lot of times people want to talk about protocol layers and the first layer and networking is the physical layer. And you know, how we did it to teach brownies is we get girls to sit in a circle and talk, and they love to do that. And then we get a ball of yarn and they pass the yarn amongst themselves as they're talking. And after a short amount of time, they see that the physical yarn has gone and connected all of them, even though they may not have spoken to each other, but it's connected all of them. And we show them that's a physical network. And they're like, oh, I got that. And that is really the basis for not just learning about communications and communications technology, but also science and neurons and that type of network. So we are those experts in how girls learn and lead, and we make sure our programming has that. Now, why does it matter to me? Well, right now the world is being recreated around technology, and I want girls not just to be users, but the creators and the inventors and the designers, so that it does reflect us and does reflect our needs, our concerns, and then the way we link and connect to one another. And I think we are needed in marketing. We are needed in design. We are needed as entrepreneurs, as coders, as the lawyers, as we're defining the rules of technology and digital and privacy and all those issues. We need to have a woman's perspective and a girl's perspective because it's, you know, we're half the population. Mm-hmm.
And you've referenced it a number of times. And on your website, I think it says even that Girl Scouts are experts in how girls learn. Are those approaches super different than how boys learn? Or how do you kind of have that discussion around gender inclusion and, you know, things like that, since you guys are Girl Scouts?
Well, so it's really important. We really just focus on girls. And that's because we know that girls doing non-traditional things will do it in a girl-only space. And that's why we over-index with, you know, having, you know, female doctors, female astronauts, all those kinds of things, because you learn those skills in that girl-only space. If you were learning them in the co-ed space in school, we wouldn't have the workforce gap we have. But we know that in Girl Scouts, we really over-index in leadership and technology and a variety of other industries. And that's because you've gotten the courage, the confidence. You were able to try and do it in a girl-only environment. You felt more safe, more confident until you got the skill at that level. And once you have that confidence, you know, you go out into the co-ed world and our Girl Scouts rule and dominate. That's fantastic. But then to your other thing, question about learning. So the de facto in a lot of cases is just the male experience. And back to that, the building the rowboat or building the boat and racing the boat. That was the de facto norm. And we look at it from a lens of, you know, is racing in middle school, building a boat and racing, is that something girls really want to do? And from our experience, and we have an institute with psychologists and with PhDs who really create, who do research, primary research. And we're about to come out with decoding digital natives research project. So if you go to our site, you'll see a lot of gratis for free research on how girls learn, lead, and very important stats about that and trends as well. So, you know, one of the things is we also know that girls really like to interact and communicate, and using that network example is another one. You know, instead of like individually getting the girls to learn this, we do it in a collective group, sitting around a circle and talking. And it's like, yeah, they love doing that, and they learn the lesson as well. So, you know, and I'll give you a more advanced example for our older girls. Again, another one of our partners said, we don't have enough girls who really understand not just the robotic arms, but, you know, but they really wanted them to have girls really understand robotic arms and being able to move them, move objects. And so we said, okay, let us figure out how do we get girls interested. And what that story and that, what we call that journey that the girls are solving is, we tell the story of there's an elephant herd in Africa that is led by a matriarch, and there are baby elephants. The matriarch leader of the herd gets caught in a hunter's snare and loses a limb. You have to create that limb, otherwise the entire herd and the baby elephants will die. Okay, girls, well, they'll like, they don't say, oh, I really need to know about mechanical engineering, I need to know about physics. They go and say, I'm going to keep that mom, I'm going to get that elephant back on her feet, I'm going to figure this out. So, you know, we see that with, for example, our cybersecurity. We have many girls working on different projects because cybersecurity is influencing how we civically engage. But there was one girl I met in the agricultural fields in California, and what she's working on for her Grand Challenge Gold Award is, she said, with the Internet of Things controlling tractors and combines, she said, I'm focusing on what happens to the sustainability of our food supply when the Internet of Things is hacked and our tractors and combines can't function. And I thought, wow. Oh my gosh, you know, she's learning about cybersecurity to make the world a better place. And I thought,
absolutely.
Yeah. So we know that girls tend to over-index of, I don't want to be an engineer just to be an engineer. I want to be an engineer because I'm going to help people do something. I'm going to help the elephant. I'm going to help the elephant herd. I'm going to keep the corgi alive. And we see that over and over with the projects that they do in their communities as well.
God, that's beautiful.
Whereas I would try to get the elephants to battle and then try to hack the food supply myself. So I think that's a great point.
Yeah.
Yeah. And another, when you talk about just the experience is pretty much normed for the male in education, you also told a story about cancer research in 1992 and how a Girl Scout was that her gold project that helped change that?
I don't know if it was her gold project, but she went to Congress and said, you know, how much of our government funded or federally funded cancer research was done on women? And the answer was zero.
Oh my God.
And so ask the next question. How much of breast cancer research federally funded was done on women in the early 90s? And the answer was zero. And you said, how on earth? And they said, well, we didn't know how to factor for hormones. That's kind of the point,
oh my
right?
God.
And so the law changed so that federal funded cancer research had to be also included women. And after that, that's why breast cancer is no longer necessarily a death sentence. We have seen a huge, huge amount of research coming from that, and life expectancies improve. And I'm so grateful she asked that question because it had not been asked. And therefore, the research had not been done at that level. And once it was done at that level with improved outcomes, it obviously spread out.
And isn't
it
the same thing now with like maternity and pregnant women that a lot of testing, you know, obviously it's dangerous, but isn't done on them. So then when they end up taking medicines during their pregnancy, it goes south a number of different ways because they just haven't figured out the research yet. That's unbelievable.
It is. And also the norm is, once again, for almost all the over-the-counter drugs, the norm is I think 180-pound male.
Wow.
Not a female.
Wow.
So as a result, when I take some cold prescriptions, I have to cut it because I'll get way too loopy.
Huh.
but because I know I'm not the, you know, I'm not the norm.
Interesting.
I'm 880-pound male is the norm. So I got to cut the dosage back.
Huh. I never thought about that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Not all the industries have changed, but at least the funding on the cancer research on federal had been changed, and we're all beneficiaries of that.
Yeah, 100%. So you, right, Girl Scouts is changing girls' lives. It's giving them confidence. It's also making our world better. I guess what is one thing that you wish teachers knew about Girl Scouts, and how could we really increase a partnership between schools and Girl Scouts?
You know, I would really appreciate that. You know, we have so many girls and the nation that would benefit from this. So you don't have to do a troop all by yourself. And we have a variety of different ways that you can do troops as well. I think some people think, oh, it's just that after-school mom model. But actually, we are incredibly flexible in the different ways that you can do troops. And we do really like the troop model because, you know, it takes girl potential, teaches her a skill, asks her to apply the skill, but also has that caring adult who's there to develop her potential. And so you could have a group of teachers who could be part of troops, or teachers could invite the Girl Scouts in, because so much of what we're doing fits so well with what is being taught in science and technology and engineering and math, some of the outdoor skills, data analytics, you know, being aware of, you know, the flora and fauna, trees, all those types of things that you might want to learn. We're teaching, as well as the social emotional learning skills. Those are so key. So what I would love teachers is get to know today's Girl Scouts, invite them into your classroom. We are very different than any other organization, including other organizations that share our last name. We are focused on girls only, and we have the research and the results that really has these amazing life outcomes.
Man, I can't tell you. I know we're up on time, and I cannot tell you how much we appreciate you both taking the time and also telling your incredible stories that just will continue to inspire people for generations. I'm sure of it. Thank you so much, Sylvia, for being you and for being with us today.
And I want to thank you, and I want to thank all the teachers that are out there. I'm here because of great teachers, great public school teachers, and I'm so grateful for all the teachers, wherever you teach and what you're doing to develop the rising generation. So thank you.
Okay, Ben, let's close up shop. What'd you learn?
Well, so much. First off, that her favorite Girl Scout cookie is the
Thin Mint.
It has to be mine too. What about you, Becky? What's yours?
I was going to say Thin Mint too, but I don't want to take yours. The peanut butter one, the tag along.
I usually just eat salted meats and lift weights, but I guess if you eat cookies, that's fine. No, but honestly, I loved what Sylvia said about really finding the no behind the no. Right, that her marching band teacher said, no, girls can't carry that drum in marching band. And she figured out that the real reason behind the marching band teacher saying that was that he didn't think she was strong enough. And so she addressed that concern. And I think so often in education, we might get a no from a student, and that no might be actually them saying no, or it might just be their behavior. And there's always a root cause. There's always something behind their misbehavior, behind their disengagement. And it's our job as teachers to really find the no behind the no. And so I want to, next time I hear no or see no in behavior from students or people I work with, I really want to seek to understand what's the true meaning behind that. I thought that was great to hear from her. How about you, Becky?
That's awesome. That's awesome. And that's one of the things that struck me most about the book when I read it too, which really is, I wasn't just blowing smoke. Like it's really good. And if you have kids, or you work with middle schoolers, it's a really cool one to pick up off the shelf for them. But a couple of things, when she talked about how those kids were like waiting in a line to see her speak, and she thought really it was because, you know, they don't often get to engage with rocket scientists that look like her. I thought that was really intense. And I think we have a lot of students that maybe we sometimes don't spend enough time trying to show those people to and let them see what they can be and really expose them to all of the different people out there that are doing amazing work that might not look like you or me. And then I was really struck too by when she was speaking about bilingual education and what an asset it can be, but that to help to honor those students' cultures as well and, you know, bring that conversation into the fold. Like just all of those things I need to get so much better at. And so that's kind of like an ongoing learning for me as well. But this episode was loaded with tangible takeaways for teachers. So we want to build that up a little bit as well. So,
hey Siri, what time is it?
It's time to get out of our heads and into the classroom.
I need help! Somebody please help me.
Help me!
Give me something I can use.
Let's get out of our heads into the classroom.
Well, that is right. It is out of our heads into the classroom, the part of the show where we give you actionable advice, tangible tips that you can bring to your classroom the next day. And today, we're trying to make them all somewhat Girl Scout related. And so my first one was, I was really impressed and challenged by the Gold Award that she talked about. Just that idea that there is this monumental, unreachable goal that girls can do in Girl Scouts and get that Gold Award. And that she heard from college professors that that's basic, or college admission, that's basically automatic entry into one of their schools, and how cool that is. And I know Boy Scouts has the same thing with the Eagle Scout Award, that really hard task to achieve. And I just thought, how neat would it be if at the start of your year, you set a couple of those goals for kids that is going to be really, really insanely difficult, and maybe one kid a year or one kid every 3 years actually hits that. But how great to have that out there as a goal. And I taught government in U.S. history for a lot of years, and I was thinking for me, maybe it would have been that I would encourage my students to go to a town hall meeting and actually speak up, or that they would call their legislator and not stop calling until they actually got to talk to them. Or maybe you're a teacher and maybe an elementary school teacher and you set the goal of reading 180 books outside of the actual classroom. So I think having a really hard, difficult goal out there for students is really motivating and could just be an awesome badge on the year.
Good one. Badge. Speaking of badges, another cool idea is make badges for your class. Have the kids generate the topics and what would be required or what kind of things they want to work on. And then you could 3D print those or have them create logos and then send it to, you know, to print stickers that they can use on their devices or, you know, on their lockers, things like this. And if you use Schoology or another learning management system, those sometimes enable you too to have students help you design badges and create a classroom or even a school-wide system for badges and mini certifications. Industry does that all the time. Like IBM, for example, their employees were just here the other day talking about how they're earning badges to further their professional learning. And that's something that we could be doing in classrooms too.
Yeah, and it'd be awesome with those badges to whatever management system you're using, be able to have students put those badges in their profile picture so that other students see it. If it is a digital badge, that'd be a great way to display it as opposed to a physical badge. Becky, what you had said about how do we make sure that students see themselves in leaders around the country, that really hit me as well, that it is so important that all those kids lined up to see Sylvia because they'd never seen a rocket scientist who looked like her. And one of the reasons I think Girl Scouts is so popular is the community aspect that it brings. And so my next tip is, how can you use just the power of video now to bring people who look different than you to the eyes of your students and really leveraging your family connections in your class? I think it'd be a great thing at the start of the year to ask students to maybe say people that they have in their lives who that would be willing to make little videos or FaceTime into your class about a certain topic, even if that thing that they're FaceTiming in is about a failure. Oh, I think it'd be really neat to reach out to your family and bring them into your classroom with video.
That's a really good idea. And then another one I want to talk about, Sylvia spoke a lot about creating opportunity through civic engagement. And recently, our social studies coordinator in our district, Jenny Pettit, she shared with us some amazing resources on engaging in civic action in your classroom. So I'll link those in show notes. But one of the ones I want to call out is this guidebook for civic engagement. It comes from the National Center for Learning and Civic Engagement, and they give examples and strategies, as well as they outline what good civic engagement instruction looks like in a classroom and how to support students in taking local or even global action on matters that are important to them, kind of like you were talking about before, Ben.
Well, as always, thank you so much for listening. I hope you liked this conversation as much as we did. And if you like this episode, could you share it with a friend?
And if you are now or were ever a Girl Scout, please add that to your LinkedIn profile. I'll have to do that before this goes live. Have a great generic time of day.